Well, it's exactly 120 days today since the election, 88 days since the cabinet was formed. Dr. Leon Schreiber is the Minister of Home Affairs. Last time we spoke, he had a very different agenda. Today, he's been on a rip, on a tear, and we're going to find out why Home Affairs has suddenly become the creator or enabler of business and jobs in South Africa. Leon, exciting times. From where I sit in the economic cluster, if you like, we are seeing very positive developments since the formation of the Government of National Unity. But it's all very well to be excited about the potential. One has to see the execution. And you've certainly put that at the top of your agenda.
Yes, Alec, it's great to be with you again. And I agree with you. The last time we spoke, things were very different. But I actually think it's important for our democracy. Because it you need in a democracy a situation where people can go from the opposition to government, and that needs to actually happen over time. And so I think that it's a good sign when you start seeing people actually making that transition. And of course, as you say, I think we've got exciting and very important opportunities at Home Affairs. And indeed, that this department has huge economic potential. I think that people often correctly talk about or think about Home Affairs as a department that issues papers, and we'll talk a bit about that later, I'm sure, and also one that has a role in national security. And of course, those two things go without saying. But it also is a very powerful economic enabler, and I think it's precisely because what you say is true, that we cannot just go on sentiment. The sentiment is very positive. It's very good for South Africa. We're seeing what's happening with the currency, our debt, etc. Those are all hugely encouraging signs. But ultimately, it's going to have to come down to concrete reform. And I think that that will have to be the challenge in all government departments. And it doesn't matter where you are. You have to contribute in your portfolio to the apex priority of the Government of National Unity, which is growing the economy and creating jobs. And so that's what I'm doing in my space as well, alongside the other functions of this department. And there are some really exciting opportunities here. So the first one that people may not always associate with Home Affairs is, of course, tourism. You know, if you go around the world and you speak with the Minister of Tourism, you'll find that people want to visit South Africa, but they often raise our visa regime as one of the restrictive elements that discourages tourism. You know, people have to go to missions abroad. There's long delays in processing sometimes. And it's meant that we have not unlocked huge source markets like China and India. I mean, if you look at China, 1.4 million Chinese tourists visited Australia last year. Only 93,000 came to South Africa. And the way in which the visa system works is one of the main reasons why we're not up there with competing with Australia in terms of attracting Chinese tourists. And so I think that is something that I very clearly understand. And so we've brought that economic logic into Home Affairs to say, let's set up a trusted tour operator scheme, because we know that especially Chinese tourists travel in big groups, and we're going to facilitate tourism and become an economic enabler in that space to create jobs. The other big example is on
Sorry,
skills.
Leon, before we move off tourism, the South African governors have been accused of not playing to our strengths. But the one strength that we do have is tourism. Have you done any analysis or able to quantify the impact that tourism could have on this country's economy generally?
Yes, I mean there are studies out there, but the bottom line of all of them is that this is a huge potential driver of growth. You're absolutely right. It's one of our strong suits. I mean, we are blessed with the most beautiful country in the world. And the things you can see here, you can't see and experience anywhere else. It's just a matter of the government getting in our own way. And so that's why we have to take that approach to cut red tape, to modernize the system, and to ultimately unlock that potential. Now, to answer the question directly, I mean, one study suggests that 0.6% of GDP, annual GDP growth, could be triggered by just a 10% increase in tourism. And you're talking there by about tens of thousands of new jobs by that one intervention alone. Of course, Alec, last year, South Africa's economy grew as a total by 0.6%. So this one intervention can double economic growth just by unlocking tourism. So I agree with you. There's huge potential for us here. And I think it's one of the key indicators that I'm going to be watching and pushing the department on to make sure, you know, the reforms we are pursuing, they must actually result in an increase in tourism. That's the measure we have to be following as Home Affairs in order to play that economic role in this space.
This trusted tour operator project of yours, just could you give it to us in a nutshell what it means and how it's going to affect those who are in the tourism industry or want to get in?
Yeah, so we already have something called a trusted employer scheme, which is working very well. And the tour operator scheme will basically extend the logic of that project. So what it will do is it will allow tour operators from China or who bring Chinese tourists to South Africa to pre-register with Home Affairs. They will be vetted and screened and security checked up front. And then they will sign a memorandum with the department where they will assume some of the risk. In other words, if they bring tourists to South Africa who end up overstaying or break the law in some manner, then they will be held responsible through being fined or being kicked out of the program or whatever the case may be. But in return for taking on some of that responsibility, we will then cut the red tape. We will enable them to submit group applications rather than individual applications. And, you know, these are the technicalities that people often don't understand or don't think about when you look at how government can enable economic growth. When we have a large tour group applying as a group of individuals, and you have to have everything from bank statements to clearance certificates, you know, the whole shebang, it's a huge administrative burden. So we're lessening the burden in return, essentially, for the companies sharing some of the risk and responsibility with us. But we are confident this has worked very well in the trusted employer scheme, where we have, I think, about 80 large corporates now who have done exactly the same thing. And that is already contributing. I mean, if you think about where the Kuberg engineers came from, well, they have to come into South Africa. They have to be facilitated through Home Affairs. And we now want to do the same thing for tourism, starting with China and India. And I'm really very excited about the potential of this program to really, in the immediate term, within a matter of months and maybe a year from now, we should have a conversation saying, look at how the number of tourists are increasing.
I was surprised that you weren't on the trip to China to go and meet the Chinese president with our president and a couple of your DA colleagues, John Steenhuisen and Dean McPherson, were there, because it is such a huge potential market for this country.
Yeah, that's right, Alec. But you know what? I'm very happy to be on the ground in the department, busy working through regulations, working through all the details of this stuff. That's really my food. I love reform. It's the work I did before entering politics as a researcher. I worked on the nitty gritty of government reform, and I can tell you, even right now as we speak, I'm busy working on refining the remote work visa as well as the new points based work visa. And it takes a huge amount of attention to detail, actually, because you have to go through these regulations and constantly ask yourself, is this practical? Is this going to contribute to security? Is this going to facilitate people coming in? And that's where I'm spending my time, very much focused on getting the details right. So, yes, I mean, I'm very, very happy to play my role at Home Affairs to unlock the opportunities for the government as a whole, because I think that's also really the spirit of the GNU.
Let's talk about those two, maybe starting with the nomad visa, as they call it, remote work. People from all over the world can come here now, work as though they were sitting in some pretty awful places that they happen to be based at, and we have the connectivity, we have the weather, we have the people, the support. I guess all we don't have is letting them in.
Yes, exactly. It goes back to Home Affairs' role as an economic enabler. And we spoke about tourism now, but this is really the second big opportunity we have to supercharge economic growth and job creation. It is on the front of attracting capital and skills, essentially. So the remote work visa is a capital injection directly into the veins of the South African economy, because this relates to people who are employed by employers abroad. So all of the risk, all of the cost associated with employing someone is carried by another country. And South Africa stands to reap all the benefits, because the salaries that those people earn will then be spent in South Africa rather than in the country that's carrying the cost. So I've said that this is really the deal of a lifetime for South Africa, because, as I say, it's a direct cash injection into the economy, and I think will contribute again to really driving growth and jobs. So where we are right now in the process, I'm happy to also share with your viewers, I made a commitment about a week ago that we'll have this up and running within 30 days. Because as I say, I am now sitting with a magnifying glass and going through all of the regulations, all of the details. I've asked the department to treat me as if I were an applicant. In other words, if I'm now the minister, but if I were applying to be on a remote work visa, what would the process look like? What would be required from me? And this is a very useful exercise, because it forces us to identify red tape. It forces us to look at the wording of our regulations to make sure that they actually don't have unintended consequences. And so that's the process we're engaged in right now. But I'm confident we're going to meet that deadline. And then we'll start rolling this out. And we're going to, I think, really make a contribution here to South Africa, as I say, by attracting the best deal we can imagine and this direct capital injection into the economy.
As far as the points-based visas are concerned, are these for more permanent residents coming into the country, perhaps entrepreneurs and so on?
Well, the difference with the points-based work visa that we're busy designing is that this one obviously relates to someone who would actually be employed in South Africa. So the remote work visa is for someone who's got a job somewhere else. They obviously are not competing with South Africans because they're working abroad, and we're basically just inviting them to come and spend their money here at South African restaurants, South African tourism establishments, South African guest houses, and thereby contributing to job creation. The points-based work visa is for someone who is offered a job in South Africa, is offered a position here. Now, you know, there's already mechanisms for some of that to happen. The critical skills list is one of those mechanisms that's been in place for many years, where a set of skills is identified by the Department of Higher Education. And then we say, you know, if you are able to contribute in this space, if your company can't find a South African with this skill, then we issue you with this critical skills visa. What the points-based work visa now is set to do is to basically create additional pathways for us to attract vital skills. It will do so by enabling applicants to obtain a work visa if they can demonstrate that they are highly skilled through other ways as well. And what's really important here, Alec, is that it really unlocks the market and positions the market as a signal of what is a critical skill. Because, you know, at the most basic level, if I offer you a salary of 2 million rand a year, I'm indicating that you are someone that I value and who has a critical contribution to make to my company, for example. So what we've done is we've looked at qualifications. The better qualified you are, the more points you will get. The higher the salary you are offered, the more points you will get. The more experienced you are, absolutely critical, the more points you will get in terms of the system. And ultimately, it will have to add up to a particular threshold, and you will then be granted that work visa. The normal other procedures will also apply. Of course, we need to, you know, have a recent police clearance certificate. We need to still do the checks that go with work visas. But this is a really exciting reform, because it enables us to really attract skills more effectively. And obviously, if your skill is on the critical skills list, you will automatically meet the threshold by definition. But now, if you are exceptionally skilled in other ways, there will also be a way for you to come and help us build the economy. You know, Alec, people don't realize that in South Africa, only 6% of people actually have a tertiary qualification. There are economies in the world where that number is 30% or higher. And we obviously have a huge amount of work to do to increase skills within the South African economy. But one of the ways we can do that is actually by leveraging off countries that do have those skills. If you bring in one highly skilled person who's able to transfer that expertise to a group of South Africans, that's also a contribution to us enhancing skills locally. And then most exciting of all, I think, in the immediate term, is the research that shows us from National Treasury, first of all. They say that after load shedding, the shortage of skills is the second biggest constraint on the economy. And if we address that constraint, we actually will supercharge economic growth. It's quite surprising. It's not ports or railways or crime or all the other things. It's actually skills. And so that's where the space is for Home Affairs. And then secondly, researchers, including Michael Sachs, who was previously with Treasury, have estimated that, if for every one highly skilled person you bring into the country, 7 to 8 new jobs are created in the South African labor market. So if you add up all of this potential in terms of attracting skills, capital, tourism, you see the enormous potential that Home Affairs has as an economic enabler. And what's very satisfying for me is that we are addressing every single one of these opportunities in a very specific way. We've got a solution on tourism. We've got a solution on remote work. We've got a solution on skills. And it's now a matter of just driving those things through into fruition.
I think we all know how the brain drain has cost the country and how so much of South Africa's skills has gone elsewhere. What you're doing is not only bringing some of those back, one hopes, as the economy grows, but maybe reversing the roles, which will be a delight to put one over the rest of the world in a way. But the big another big question is illegal immigration. Now, I saw on your Twitter timeline, and it's thanks for sharing in the way that you do, because it does keep us members of the public real updated. But I saw there was affection, but certainly you did compliment and thank Gaten McKenzie for bringing something to your attention. In the hurly-burly of politics, the DA and the PA have been punching each other. Within the government of national unity, are you finding each other in the first instance? And the second instance is he's been a huge advocate for addressing illegal immigration. And this is something that's right in your remit at the moment. So can you give us an update on that too?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the country comes first. It demands that we work together. And I think that that's the spirit in which the GNU is moving forward. I mean, there are many people in this cabinet. They come from different backgrounds, and we have to work together to take the country forward. And that's really what's front and center. Political campaigning and all of that stuff will always be there. It's healthy in a democracy. So, I mean, you don't have to suspend democracy or political competition in order to work together in a coalition government. And Alec, you'll recall, I mean, I wrote a book about coalitions in 2018 called Coalition Country. So I get it. I mean, it is really important that when you are there to serve the country that you actually do that, and you do so collaboratively with everyone in government. And I think that probably the sentiment that you are seeing in terms of the currency and in the broader economy is at least partly driven by observations that investors and the public are making, that there is a sincere effort to work together. And I think that long may that continue in that space. I think as I say, politics will always be there. It's, we're going to campaign vigorously. We understand some of the things that are happening right now in the local government sphere that are really concerning, including the motion of no confidence in the brilliant mayor of Tshwane. I mean, so that is certainly still where the political contestation has to take place, precisely because things can and will continue to go wrong in some instances. So it's a healthy balance, I think, between the two. I think, obviously, as I said up front, Home Affairs has a vital role to play in really restoring national security. And what I have to just put on the table very clearly here is that this problem did not happen or arise overnight. It has been brewing for many, many years and even decades through disinvestment in South Africa's border infrastructure, through failure to embrace modern technology. And that has really, over time, led to this major problem we have of what people call the porousness of our borders and that whole management of that system. So, you know, I've said many times we can, you know, we can try and run faster on the hamster wheel and try and put out fires and run around and, you know, look like we're doing something about this problem. And in many cases, we will still have to do that because we're living with the consequences. The issue of Libyans who came into this country with handwritten visas and with processes there being flouted is a consequence of our failure to modernize the immigration system. And we will now have to deal with that over the next period. So we are, in some sense, going to be running faster on the hamster wheel. But what we also need to do, Alec, is to get off the hamster wheel, is to build a new and fundamentally modernized and better system. And this is where my focus on digital transformation is going to be actually really vital to us fixing South Africa's immigration system. Because what we need to do, first of all, is fix the visa issuing process. It is inconceivable to me that a country can issue paper-based handwritten documents that enable someone to enter this country. And even worse than that, that the granting of those visas could happen in a way that is not recorded on a you know, database system where you can actually view how the adjudication was made. And yet that is the reality of South Africa's immigration system today. So if we are actually serious, not only about running around after problems, but actually solving them, we are going to have to change that system. And so what we are working really hard on is to automate and digitize adjudication of visas as well, so that we are able to say the system is closed to human interference. And you know, there are enormous opportunities here because a machine learning algorithm can identify a fraudulent birth certificate or a fraudulent document much, much better than a human eye ever could. You know, you can cross-reference various databases in the application process if you use modern technology. And of course, a computer doesn't take your file and put it under the desk and say, pay me something in order for me to process this. And that's where the corruption happens. And so we are going to have to fully insulate and close this system using really modern technology as our ally. And the good news is, Alec, can be done. If you look at the South African Revenue Service and the e-filing system, that's exactly what we need at Home Affairs. We need the equivalent of e-filing, where someone can log onto a profile, submit an application, and it all is processed instantly, effectively, and in a manner where there's no space for any person to basically interfere. So that's where we're working towards. It's a big project, but I'm really confident that if we get that right, we're going to be tackling the problem of illegal immigration in a very systematic and serious manner that doesn't require us over time to run around and put out fires. It will actually help us to prevent people coming in undetected, people not being detected while they're in the country, and certainly fraud and corruption in this space.
Thanks for putting that into context, because e-filing, of course, is a landmark in this area. But more recently, Eskom, Mteto Nyati, was telling us how much progress they've been making against corruption by using technology and using artificial intelligence. So it's nice to see that there is a positive side to it. Leon, you've just turned 36. It feels like you've been around a heck of a lot longer than that. What happens from here? And in particular, when you have a look at the structure of the Government of National Unity, I'm sure we'd all love to know what kind of a CEO we've got in President Ramaphosa. He seems to have been rejuvenated in the last 120 days. How does he handle meetings? Does his private sector experience perhaps help a little there in the cabinet?
Yes. Look, I mean, it's an interesting process, Alec. And of course, what is required of all of us, and we've made progress on this, is to get to know each other. I was really astonished during the negotiation process that there really were no personal relationships across the political aisle. And I think that was really an eye-opener, because that's not normal, especially in coalition-based societies, but also in other societies, even in the United States, with all its polarization and its two-party system, people know each other on a personal level. And yet, in the South African case, Of course, there are people who know each other, but it's much more limited. And it was, you know, the levels of trust were so low that you didn't have the trust to just reach out and speak to each other. And that has changed very dramatically. I can tell you that. The relationships that are being built, the way in which people are interacting with each other, I think is much healthier, even beyond simply the immediate needs of the GNU, because it fosters, you know, the basic level of human relationship that's required to actually have serious conversations about things. So I think, first of all, the relationship between John Steenhuisen and President Ramaphosa has been really important to getting us where we are. I think they both deserve real credit for the way in which they have navigated not only the coalitions, but also more recently things like the Bella Bill, the Basic Education Amendments. Because, yes, of course, we should have put together the technical committee much earlier to make sure that we don't end up in a situation where we are disagreeing at the last minute. But at the same time, I think that the way that that was handled and, you know, Minister Steenhuisen's recommendation to phone some of the stakeholders for the president to actually speak to them directly, that is something that's now possible because of the GNU and because of the relationship that they have built. That would never, ever have happened in the past for the president to phone Solidarity and AfriForum to get their view on something. And I think it's an important marker of the maturity that both the president and Minister Steenhuisen have brought to the GNU. And I think you can see that too in your question about the meetings. I mean, we have robust discussions. I think they will become increasingly robust because, you know, we are dealing with important issues like budgets and other things that are coming down the track. But certainly it's being handled in a respectful manner on all sides. And that's really what's going to be critical to the success of the GNU going forward, is to understand, as I said earlier, we are in a contested political environment. We live in a democracy. And so it's healthy for people to have different views and different political strategies, but it must always be played out in a bigger context of saying, don't become destructive, don't undermine the broader interests of the country, even as we continue to contest politically. And that's going to be the requirement, the balance that needs to be struck, not only by Mr. Ramaphosa, but also by all other political leaders in the GNU.
Did you imagine ahead of the election that this was possible?
Look, I believed that the ANC was going to lose its majority. And you know, the DA for a very long time leading up to the election was indicating what we were seeing in our polling. And I think it's worth just reflecting on that for a moment, that when the DA talks about what we're seeing in our data, it's actually worth taking seriously because we have a truly, truly world-class polling and research division. And so, you know, I think you'll recall, Alec, as people were speaking ahead of the election, there was a lot of speculation, but there was also a lot of disbelief. There were a lot of people saying, you know, it'll never happen. You know, the DA is making stuff up. I mean, there were even people running to, you know, complain about what polling was showing, and including the polling from the Social Research Foundation, which came along a bit later, but essentially reflected something very similar to what we were seeing. So no, it was not a surprise to me or to anyone who was actually following the credible data closely that the ANC's vote share collapsed to the extent that it did. But I think that the post-election environment is obviously something that no one had experienced before. And so navigating that was a unique experience. I think it's something that a lot of books will still be written about in a few months or years' time. Because that is indeed not something that anyone could have seen coming. And the way in which it played out, the way in which we ended up with this particular configuration of the government of national unity, no one could have predicted that. But I think the way we came through it is worth always keeping in the back of our minds, because there was another alternative. And that alternative was what we had been warning about constantly as the Doomsday Coalition, essentially the takeover of government by the MK, the EFF, and, you know, factions within the ANC that wish to work with those parties. And, you know, that is the alternative. So even as we go along with the GNU, and we must understand it's not going to be perfect, there will be challenges and disagreements, and many of them will be healthy at the end of the day, but they can be difficult. We must always keep in mind that the alternative really is too ghastly to contemplate. And that's why these parties came together to actually put South Africa first. And I think the outcome of the process, as unprecedented as it was healthy. We didn't have soldiers on the streets. We actually had people sitting together and saying, look, we have to find each other because we cannot give this country over to MK and the FF.
Dr. Leon Schreiber is the Minister of Home Affairs. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.